Welcome to Web Talk Radio at webtalkradio.com for March 6, 2006. My name is Rob Greenlee. Dana Greenlee is here. She is a curator of boston-legal.org and host of the Boston Legal Podcast.
Yay.
Yay.
Curing
Thanks
all
ills. Thanks for being here, Dana. And back on the line, actually, he's normally in the studio here, but we have Mitch Radcliffe, who's a ZDNet blogger, and he's also can be found at radcliffeblog.com. Mitch basically is keeping everybody up to speed on technology trends. What, at ZDNet now, Mitch?
Yeah, mostly at ZDNet. I wouldn't say just technology trends. I'm doing more technology, law, and ethics and things like that.
Oh, okay. Well, and you're doing a lot of political blogging, I noticed, at Radcliffe Blog these
days.
Yeah,
I split them off so that people could get a dose of my politics without having to take the technology or vice versa.
So Mitch, do I start calling you Mitch Lessig now?
No, you should.
Okay. All the topics.
That's blending two online brands, right?
Yeah, we wouldn't want to do that.
No, we couldn't possibly do that.
Well, so. It would be, you know, copyright infringement, which is what he's blogging about, I guess.
Yeah, that's true. What else are you up to these days?
We are building software at BuzzLogic, which used to be called Persuadio, and that's going quite well. And then
New name, huh?
We did a little merger with another tool vendor, and now you, in addition to being able to understand what's going on in the world, you can communicate with the world through some tools we've got. And in addition to that, you know, as usual, I've got several things going. I'm working with Audible on their WordCast product, and that's about it.
That's probably enough to keep you busy. So is there anything at this, you know, at the Persuadio site that a person can go look at and
Buzz
see what
Logic.
You're up to? BuzzLogic?
BuzzLogic, yeah. You can go learn about what we do, but we haven't got any mapping tools open to the public. We've built something that's so compute intensive that we actually have to charge for this stuff.
Oh, okay.
Well, that's unusual.
So is there
it's a charge for a product.
Yeah,
is there going to be
crazy talk?
I know that's very unusual these days to actually charge for something. So, is there going to be anything that you know, the public can get in and take a look at what you're doing, or is it all going to be behind kind of a
well? Eventually, we'll offer some free tools as well. But right now, we got to make sure that we're paying people for what they do.
Sure. Well, that makes sense.
We got lots of stuff to talk about that we're going to present to you right now. Like, for instance, Rob.
What is the future of Web Talk Radio? And we're also going to talk about why the Origami project for Microsoft might be important.
And we're wondering if maybe Yahoo and Google are staring at each other in the mirror.
And we're going to talk about IPTV. Does it have a future, or is it going to be just web-based TV?
And is Google becoming an Internet access service provider? We're going to talk about that topic as well. Dana and I can be reached at rob@webtalkradio.com and dana@webtalkradio.com. We appreciate you tuning into the show. We are part of the techpodcast.com network. If it's tech, it's here, and the network has a great lineup of technology podcasts. And we can also be found on the mobile phone at mobilecast.com. Just drop the E in mobile, and you can get right to that software to run on your mobile phone.
Oh, you know where else we are now?
Yeah, well,
I don't know if a lot of people know this, but if you have TiVo, we're not talking DVRs, but TiVo.
TiVo, yeah.
They have a new podcast choice on there, so now we just turn on our web talk or my Boston Legal podcast and listen to it from our
on
big
our
screen.
Big screen television. Well, it's still a little complicated to get the application loaded on the TiVo, though, because it's still like an experimental project. You got to go to the login at, I think it's My TiVo on the TiVo website and actually have it installed. It's like a beta project. Is what it is.
Can I say something a little bit about that I mentioned Boston Legal Podcast? I've had some really interesting things happen in the last few weeks.
Yes, you have.
Instead of having just a co-host, just another fan like myself, I've been asking guest stars from the show to come on, and we had the first one last week.
Yeah,
cool.
We had
Georgia Murray, who runs with her family Nemo Bay, and they filmed an episode earlier this season there, and she was actually on the episode that we talked about. She was there the whole podcast giving her feedback on what it was like to film. And then coming up, we're going to have Meredith Patterson on one of the episodes. So that's
another,
a nice thing.
Another singer as well.
Well,
right?
she's actually the woman that married Tom Selleck in the episode.
Yeah.
She's Tom Selleck's wife. He came on for Sweeps Week on a Boston Legal. So Mrs. Selleck. Anyway, let's talk a little bit about the future of Web Talk Radio. Rob, what are you talking about here? What's our future?
Well, I'm not quite sure what our future is. Why don't you tell us what our future is, Dan? No, I'm just kidding.
It's been 2 weeks since our last one, and we've been kind of hit and miss a lot.
Yeah.
And that's because of your work, pretty much.
Well, yeah, I've been moving around quite a bit, doing other things. So my thought at this point is that we're going to move the show website over to techpodcast.com. It's actually going to be hosted over there in the next few weeks, and it's going to be on a movable type web log kind of back end.
Still
technology.
Just go to webtalkradio.com?
Yeah, I'm going to point the same URL over there, and we're kind of building out a podcast network at techpodcast.com. It's actually been one of the longest running podcast networks online, I think. So we're going to shoot for trying to keep the show down to about 30 minutes and try and do it weekly, get back into that rotation again.
Are we still doing interviews?
Well, if I can squeeze it in, yeah.
Okay.
Definitely.
All right, good.
Mitch, what's your thought on all those topics? I mean, what do you think we should do with Web Talk Radio? What's your thought?
You're describing a pretty typical problem people are having, which is, you know, how do you keep the momentum up? And you've been doing it for, what, 8 years now?
Yeah.
So if anybody knows about how to keep the momentum going, it's you. and change isn't necessarily the worst thing that can happen. I mean,
it's the technology version of time to make the donuts. You just do it.
Yeah, that's true. But
so the question is, you know, where are you feeling like your real, I hate to say it this way, but where your passion lies?
Yeah, the bliss. Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, if that's the way it feels like it needs to go, it should probably go that way for a while. But it doesn't necessarily mean it's going to go that way forever. And, you know, you guys have changed with the times more than most, so go for it.
And one of the reasons that I want to move over to the Tech Podcast Network is because the tools there will help automate some of the processes that I normally have to go through that are pretty labor-intensive. I'm trying to streamline, and that's one way that I can do that and still be a part of a network that's going to be funneling sponsors and advertisers and things like that into programs. So, and that's one big broad advantage for being a part of a podcast network is that aggregation of traffic and that network can go after sponsors and help pay podcasters to do what they do as well. Microsoft's Origami project. I can
feel the donuts being made right
yes,
now.
The whole Origami project, and I should probably explain what that is. It's kind of a secret project that I don't really know how secret it really is.
I don't think
in reality.
It was the opposite of secret.
Yeah, I think it was played up like it was secret, but I think it's a PR stunt by Microsoft to kind of let the cat out of the bag on this one. But it's like a mini tablet PC kind of concept, it kind of being positioned to go after the iPod market. What do you think about this, Mitch?
In fact, I wrote about this on my ZD blog the other day, but it makes sense that they would be doing this. What I think they're aiming at is not so much the iPod market, but they're trying to serve people who were raised on games, on interactive games. Mm-hmm. And this is the beginning of a transition toward a device that, in addition to being a work device, the way we would think of, you know, most Windows things being, is also a device for playing, including audio, video, downloadable music, downloadable TV, and I think most importantly that the games that you can play on the Xbox 360 are going to end up being part of the whole experience you get with this Origami device.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think if Microsoft executes on this thing and really does it well, I think it has the potential to really have an impact out there, especially if they can build into it wireless internet access, and that's even beyond Wi-Fi into, you know, the new wireless access from the cell phone carriers now. The high-speed networks that are starting to come out, if this device can be always connected, I think it really is an interesting play.
It is not exactly portable. You kind of measured it out for me. It's a big old honking thing you can't carry around in your pocket like an iPod.
Well, you can't carry around in your pocket, but it's got a larger screen than the iPod has too, which is a significant advantage. Plus, it's a full-fledged PC, from what I understand, right?
But then it becomes a laptop.
Well, it's a full-fledged PC in the same way that the Newton was, that you plug in a keyboard and it becomes more of a PC than it was. It's a tablet PC, and I think you're going to find that this is really a device that's intended for very brief communication, not the kind of thing you would do with a Trio, you know, where it's where you fanatically check your email. And certainly the messaging that they've done about the product says that it's not designed for being a work thing. It's a design for being a kind of a, you know, I'm cool and I'm connected thing.
Yeah. Well, that makes sense. And if they can make that the Xbox work with it somehow, or have some way of bringing those two mediums together in the whole Media Center PC, I think it starts pulling all of these products that Microsoft has together. Hopefully they'll enable it to actually interface with all those other products as well. That's for sure.
I think you'll see that. I think you'll see that you can plug the external hard drives that go on the Xbox into the Origami devices.
Mm-hmm. Well, and if the actual device itself will have a significant hard drive in it, then then you can just transfer data between those two things as well. So, but one other thing that I've noticed here in the last couple of days is that it seems like Yahoo's starting to look more and more like Google all the time. Mitch, I don't know if you notice that or not, but if you look at Yahoo Search's homepage.
So you're saying Yahoo has Google goggles on?
Yeah, and
rub it in.
And Google's starting to look more and more like Yahoo all the time too. So,
well, the two companies are competing for the same markets in a lot of ways, and so you're going to see them begin to, you know, kind of look a lot alike. That's the problem with competition these days, is that people think that imitation is the way to win. You know, the consumer, they think they just want the same old familiar thing, when in fact, what people want are a whole lot of different things. And I think you're going to see, as a result, a lot of competitors moving into little niche spaces that these guys ultimately acquire.
Mm-hmm.
That's the game in Silicon Valley now, is what can I make that Yahoo or Google can pick up for $20 to $30 million? And, that's it.
I mean, one thing that really jumped out in my mind when I was looking at these two sites is that Yahoo's definitely got a stronger emphasis toward video and audio that they put right up front. I mean, it's like, you know, there's links to video and audio right there. But if you look at Google, the audio and video stuff is still buried. It's not brought forth as one of the primary links off of the front page. And I guess that kind of reflects the orientation of the company as well.
So we're not just talking, we're talking about functionality, but we're also talking about just the aesthetics, or I should say the anti-aesthetics, since it's
it's
the white
really,
page.
Really simple.
But there's no shame in stealing designs. I mean, yes, that's not imaginative, Mitch, I agree, but that's how the internet was born. On, like, I just want to make my site look like Yahoo. Just want to make my site
exactly.
Clean like Google.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, in a lot of ways, Yahoo looks more like it did in 1994 than...
Ah,
95,
well,
that's, well, too.
That's,
before it got all tabbed out.
That's certainly
true. What happens is when what goes around comes around.
Yeah,
talk about cliche, right? But they're cliches for a reason.
Yeah. Well, and I think that Yahoo is becoming more like Google. I think for probably obvious reasons that they want to take advantage of some of the same things that Google's been doing all along, but. It almost seems like they need to go beyond what Google's doing. And I did hear that Google's playing around with some new designs of their web pages again. I think I heard a blog somewhere that said that Google put up a totally new layout for a day or so last week or something like that.
Well, I'm not exactly sure what Yahoo would be aiming for that Google has been doing that Yahoo hasn't. They both sell advertising. They both want to be able to place advertising in proximity to other people's pages.
Mm-hmm.
The designs of the search interfaces for each of the sites is, you know, only the tip of the iceberg for either one of them. What they're really trying to do is build ad hoc networks of sites that are displaying their advertising over the long term. And that's where everything's headed. And that says keep your homepage as plain as possible, because you don't want to take away from what we're going to be directing people to.
Yeah, well, that's
and,
true.
And, you know, the big difference is Yahoo is producing its content and Google is appropriating its own content.
Yeah. Well, and is this going to force Yahoo into basically kind of removing themselves a little bit more from the actual content business? Because it seemed like, you know, that the announcement here recently that the media group down in Los Angeles had decided that that they were going to back away from creating TV programs that were just, you know, like regular television shows. They were going to really focus on doing unique type things. But it really makes me wonder how long Yahoo's really going to be able to sustain that kind of approach when Google isn't involved at all with creating content.
just because Google doesn't do it doesn't mean it's not a good idea for Yahoo to try. I mean, creating content is a great way to attract attention.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they won't make television shows, but maybe they never should have made television shows. Paying for the production of reality TV isn't, I think, the best expense somebody could undertake. But you could certainly, you know, do a lot of original content that, or facilitate people creating content through your sites. And that all of that is, in, you know, very large part, the creation of original content that Yahoo could exploit. So, you know, I happen to think that Yahoo's got a better overall strategy because it's at least coherent. And, you know, Google's is, let's just, you know, try to index everything.
Yeah.
But then, you know, they make all these demands on personal information. They make demands on content providers rather than working with them in many cases. They just sort of say, you're going to have to deal with the fact we're going to change your business. That's a pretty inefficient way to build a large and coherent market, is to, you know, put divisions in.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. And one thing that kind of jumps out of my mind with Yahoo getting into content creation, and this kind of rolls into our next story, is there a future for IPTV? I mean, really, I mean, it seems like that there is, but I think that there's an awful lot of movement right now with web-based TV right now. I mean, you look at CBS.com, you look at a lot of the major media companies, and they're coming out with media that's available off of websites and that's freely, openly available out there and not behind some controlled, you know, IPTV network.
Mm-hmm.
And it really begs the question, you know, is this open display of content off of websites going to undermine the IPTV initiative, or whether or not it's going to help propel it forward? I'm not quite sure. What do you think, Mitch?
Well, you know, the important thing is that there be APIs for people to build interesting applications for mm-hmm. getting at and organizing this information for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And we're never going to see a situation like with cable where, you know, you have to buy a big package of content, even if you're not going to watch 99% of it, every
mm-hmm.
month for $45.
Mm-hmm.
But you're going to see a lot more, you know, smaller kinds of offerings that are, you know, very focused and that you mix and match into your own schedule. Whether or not that's live streaming or downloaded or otherwise really doesn't matter. What matters is that, you know, it's not all embedded in somebody's proprietary player in such a way that it could never be mixed with anything else. And to the degree that it's embedded in different types of proprietary players,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, there certainly will be these things, how much is that open and useful for other things that one might want to do? You know,
mm-hmm.
can you listen to the content on a lot of different devices? Can you watch the content on your television, your computer,
mm-hmm.
on an iPod, and all these sorts of things? And whichever vendors do a good job of, you know, getting their stuff out there are going to be the ones that are most successful in that environment. So it's going to be a big mix. It's not going to be all open, no proprietary, nothing, and it's not going to be all proprietary, no open, nothing. It's going to be something that's all mixed up, just like everything else that we've ever had to deal with, because that's the nature of competition.
Yeah, I've been wondering about the whole IPTV thing, because if you look at like a Comcast or, you know, some of these cable TV providers, you know, an IPTV network is, it's essentially a walled garden, a closed network. And I'm wondering, you know, as you look out in the future here, it seems like the ISPs are moving more and more in that direction all the time, of trying to set up a little more controls on how much bandwidth is there. And that kind of leads into the next story that we have about, you know, big telcos wanting to control and create tiered networks and things like that. Is there more control coming that's going to limit the openness and how we can all use these IP networks?
There's always going to be tiered services on the back end.
Mm-hmm.
There are now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're a guy who has a lot of video that you want hosted in a reliable way, that, you know, when it streams, or that you want it to be able to download quickly when people get it, take it where they want to take it, you're going to pay the carrier for a big fat pipe connecting you to the net. But what we cannot afford, either as an industry or as individual customers, is an environment where the ISP says, you know, on top of whatever you're paying for the content, you're going to pay us for faster connectivity to bring it. The carriers just have to recognize that if they want to be competitive in this market, that they have to make as broadband a service available as possible in order to make the delivery of any content seamless and easy to, you know, experience. This argument is called the net neutrality argument, and the basic idea is, you know, the net will treat every piece of traffic the same. That's in the last mile. That's in the choke point between the service and the user. What you don't want is somebody who says, well, in order to get to the user, you got to pass through our little tunnel, and the tunnel will be as wide as we say it's going to be based on what you pass. That's going to add all sorts of extra costs to the network that are going to kill, you know, the potential delivery of new content and new services through the network. And at the same time, I think anybody who thinks that if they want to go from being a little service provider, which, you know, should also be facilitated through the broadband connection to your home, your up and downstream services ought to be, you know, basically the same speed. So that if you want to start a small business and you pay $45 or $99 a month, whatever it is for your broadband connectivity, you do that. But if you want to go big, you're going to end up paying more. That's just the reality of how this works.
Each one of us could be hosting our own content to the internet through our own servers.
Well, in fact, you and
homes.
I do.
Yeah. Well, I don't do it as much as you do. I mean, I've got my own servers that are co-located in another facility.
Right.
But it would be ideal to be able to pull that stuff home. You know, if I had the real, you know, speed that I need at a reasonable cost here in the house. But, you know, I've got five or six servers, so it's a little difficult. I mean, I could set up a server rack in my
spare. Well, you're already kind of a medium-sized guy.
Yeah, well.
That's why you're doing that.
Yeah.
I'm just, you know, a little schmo.
Well, I wouldn't say that, Mitch.
Well, I am. I'm just a little schmo. I have no problem with the fact that my blog and my webcast or my podcast are small enough that, you know, I don't have that big an audience. It's fine.
And this raises, you know, a whole other topic, which is a company like Google going to get into this space as an internet access provider or internet service provider? Because they're getting pressured from these big telecommunications companies that they're going to get dinged with service charges because they're using too much of the network, or is the fees going to go?
But that's ridiculous. Yeah. That's ridiculous. I mean, if it's too much of the local network, the problem the local network has is they're not facilitating enough bandwidth to their users, and they can say to their users, "Look, we want to increase. You know, we'll offer you not 3 megabytes per second or megabits per second, but we'll offer you 60."
Mm-hmm.
And if you want, you know, and somebody else, we should be in a situation, we're not, we should be in a situation where somebody else can, by doing some other technology or stringing together a whole bunch of people who decide they want to, you know, create a community wireless system without the government telling you you can't, because carriers have, you know, paid the government off to create regulations to prevent you from doing so.
Mm-hmm.
There should be an environment where, you know, enough bandwidth is available at the curb that anybody can do what they want to do.
Mm-hmm.
On the back end is where these guys need to be making their money. And if, you know, it's through selling OC3 circuits into colo facilities like the one that you have,
yeah,
or whether it's selling, you know, multiple super fat pipes to a guy who has a movie distribution service, that's where their, you know, their business is going to be focused. It's got to be on treating bits as bits, and as many bits as the end point you are selling services to wants. It doesn't change, you know, the value of the bits shouldn't be changing. That's the problem, is that these guys are trying to say, oh, well, you know, in this last mile, because this is a telephone call as compared to a movie or email or something else, we're going to charge you less. And so that makes it virtually impossible for the end user to use the net confidently, you know, without thinking, oh, God, you know, I'm going to end up paying 10 times as much as I thought.
The core issue, though, I think, is if you look out with IPTV, is that IPTV could wind up saturating your internet connection into your home. Because let's say you have 2 or 3 TVs running, and each of those TVs takes maybe what a sustained stream. If you got 3 TVs running at the same time, it could take a meg or more for each television. And you could basically saturate that pipe. And I guess what they're thinking is that they would partition access speed based on usage for, like, telephone calls and getting access to a constant stream that maybe wasn't didn't have buffering issues because you were using it to transfer files around or other types of browsing activities that could interfere with that. And I'm just wondering if we're getting into a time period where kind of that model of how we view online access needs to evolve. Maybe it does need to split into two kind of services, one that you browse the web with and one that you get, you know, your IPTV service through or something like that. I'm not sure.
But yeah, but then what you're describing is the world that we exist in today, where I've got a broadband service coming into my house that is displaying television images to me, and I've got another service that's displaying the end result of moving a lot of bits over an IP connection.
Yeah, that's true.
And so, I mean, what you're describing is more of the same, not a change to a new regime.
Well, I guess, I mean, I can see your point there because, you know, if you look at a Comcast, you do get your internet connection through that same coaxial cable. And it's thought about differently. It's not necessarily an open online deal, you know, moving into the television, where that would be more, I guess, a way for you to get to more of an open, I don't know about open, but get to all sorts of different kinds of content that would be sourced off of the internet directly.
Okay, but then what you're saying is if the carrier says that content has become more popular and therefore they're going to take a 10% surcharge on the delivery of that content, and the content provider doesn't get a share of that, you know, I mean, they don't enjoy any benefits of this new charge, and even may suffer from the fact that because the traffic is now more expensive, people will actually opt not to look at it.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, that's the kind of stuff we have to avoid.
Yeah, that's
or we choke off the kind of creativity that we actually do need. And you know, on the net, the broader the last mile is, the better for the carriers. They just don't want to acknowledge that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that's true. And right now, I mean, I've got servers that are serving content right now, and I'm actually offered tiered service right now. I mean, I can buy tier
because you're
one.
In a colo facility.
Yeah, I mean, I can get a tier one connection to the net right now, or I can get a tier three connection, which is not as redundant or not as reliable. But tier one, so as a Google or as a, you know, a Microsoft, they have those options as well. Do they?
And Google Google is building its own network in order to get it as close to the end user as possible.
Exactly.
But we're talking about two different things, Rob. We're talking about, when we talk about tiered service, we're talking about tiered service that actually increases the price to the end user, not to the provider.
Mm-hmm. Well,
and so that's what I'm saying we can't get into. Is what we have to do is treat the data the same in that last mile, and if the carriers want to make more money, then they have to provide better services, not just say, you know, we're going to charge more because this is particularly popular kinds of data.
It's going to be an issue that's going to be fought over quite a bit, I think, over the next couple of years, or actually probably quite a bit in the future as we use these data networks more. Well, Mitch, thanks for calling in again and joining us.
Oh, you're welcome. Anytime.
All right.
We'll be doing that.
Well, terrific, Mitch. Thank you.
Okay, thanks.
All right, well, that wraps up another show this week at Web Talk Radio. We appreciate you tuning in and listening and downloading, I guess, more than likely. We hope that, you know, we brought some insight into what's happening on the internet and the future of the web. And go visit our website at webtalkradio.com. And Dana,
we'll see you around the net.
We'll see you around the net.